south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, how about this email from Stu? He says, "Dear Johnny, you're so right. Everywhere you turn, you see golden opportunities for business in Latin America. In the strangest places, even. Perfect example. The other day, I was at the American consulate, the American embassy, in Panama. I had to get a certified copy of my passport and stop at the Social Security desk and pick up some forms and paperwork. Oh, and it's worth pointing out, Johnny, when you go to a U.S. embassy or consulate, there'll be a Social Security office right in there. So if you're an old-timer like me and you have some kind of problem or issue with Social Security, you can actually talk to someone face-to-face at the U.S. Embassy instead of sending emails to the Social Security division that won't get answered for 2 weeks, even more. Or, God forbid, trying to call and getting put on hold for 40 minutes at a crack. I can attest to that. Both of those things have happened to me. So there I was at the U.S. Embassy in Panama City, having to go through 3 different pat-downs, scanners, and checkpoints. Even having to take off my Cubs baseball hat as if that's where I had a mini nuke or a hidden glob of C4 or something. Nope, they certainly don't treat you as a welcome guest in your own embassy, that's for sure. Oh, and this I forgot to tell you. Even being American, I had to get an appointment online in order to walk into my own embassy. Though I understand there's a quick access line that'll let you in for an emergency if you got your passport stolen or something. But it has to be a dire emergency. Nevertheless, I had to go online. It took a week and a half to get into the next available slot. Johnny, somehow, that doesn't seem right. I know a real old-timer who's been living in Panama a long time. He's around 88. He's never used a computer. How's he ever going to get an appointment at the embassy? I suppose this is a good time to tell you what it used to be like 3 or 4 years ago. You just go down to the consulate, go into the line with the sign that said U.S. citizens, show the guy at the booth your passport, and they'd let you right in. There were never more than 2 or 3 people in that line. You'd get in right away. Yes, you'd get the third degree in a pat-down, but you were in the building immediately. Why did they have to screw with a system that was working just fine? But you know the government's motto. If it ain't broke, let's create a department to see why and then tweak it until it's out of whack, like everything else. What I'm saying is, Johnny, last time I was there a few years ago, the system worked well. For Americans, no appointment necessary. However, outside the building, there was another line, about a block long, just jam-packed with local Latinas and Latinos. All of them, as you may have guessed, looking to get a legal visa to get into the States. But that was then. These days, even us U.S. citizens have to wait a week and a half to see a real face in our own embassy. Other than that, outside the building, there's still a line about a block long, just chock full of Latinos and Latinas. Probably the same ones I saw online a few years ago. Don't laugh. It could be true. I've been in Panama long enough to know the ins and outs of mañana time. Even so, nothing surprises me when it comes to our U.S. embassy. Every time I go to the place, thankfully that's only every couple of years, it's bigger, the place is expanded, there's more bureaucracy, more surveillance stuff, more everything. But then, since when does anything in government get smaller and more streamlined? That reminds me of a quote from Zero Hedge. It goes like this: "There's no problem so small that a government won't step in to create a commission, committee, department, or program to overly complicate whatever part of the system that worked or had some value." Yes, I like that quote, except lots of people are too young to know how the system worked before, when it was much less complicated. They think what they see today is the norm, so they go along with the program. Sorry, Johnny, I digress. So, when I walked up to the main gate, the first embassy guard pointed to a sign that said in English and Spanish, "No phones, no cameras, no computers, no laptops, and of course, guns and knives. There are no electronic devices of any kind." I had a handful of that stuff, so I looked at the guard and said, "What do I do with it? Do you have a locker or something?" He shrugged and said, "Nope, sorry." Ever so helpful, those government slugs. So I walked 4 blocks back to the parking lot and put the stuff in my car. And that, Johnny, is what brings me to a great gringo business idea. Since there are hundreds of people a day going in and out of those embassy doors, and everyone's got some kind of device or other they won't let you in with, why not rent a tiny little commercial space? They're all over the place, especially around embassies where there's lots of foot traffic. They're always located in a business or commercial district. Then you rent a place, a little hole in the wall. Dress it up. Make it look nice. Accent the red, white, and blue. 10 by 10, 100 square foot would probably be fine. Put in some of those cheap keypad lockers they have in grocery stores, you know. Put your bag in there, press a 4-digit number, come back when you're done shopping, press that number again and you're out. Or you could go fancy and buy some of those locker cabinets they have in airports and bus stations. Bottom line, for $1,000 or $2,000, you could have a very nice little business there. Just one attendant and a couple of cameras, you're set. And you would never have to be there. And about the name, well, you'd want to tie in the U.S. and the embassy thing. So maybe you'd want to call it Embassy or American Embassy Storage. And maybe you have an American Eagle or George Washington's head painted outside on the front as your logo. Then put the word out with the embassy guards. Make up some little flyers. Have a kid hand them out to the people mulling around in the hundreds in line. Johnny, it's a no-brainer, and it would certainly solve a lot of problems. Every gringo expat I know, and even the locals, would use a service like that. The fact that the embassy doesn't allow phones, iPads, computers, cameras, anything electronic, that's a niche that should be looked at as a business opportunity. Why hasn't someone else thought of that before? Who knows, but they haven't. Or there'd be one and everyone would know about it. And Johnny, I don't think it's just me, but not a week goes by where I don't see some kind of business opportunity jump right out in front of me. I'm no whiz kid or creative genius either. It's just that the more you get around, the more niches you see that need to be filled. One last thing, Johnny. The reason why I went to the Social Security desk at the embassy is because though I get my monthly checks direct deposited to my bank in Panama, and they usually come like clockwork on the 3rd of every month, well, it just so happened a big problem came up. Suddenly, last month on May 3rd, no deposit. That's the first time that ever happened. I tried calling, sent a few emails, and got nothing but a computer-generated email that said, "We've received your email. Your request is being processed." In the meantime, I spoke with some other expats who are getting Social Security, and here's what I discovered. Usually, once a year, you don't know exactly when, the Social Security Administration will send a letter, a snail mail letter, to your given address. It'll be a form letter with the usual government claptrap, along with a questionnaire asking things like, has your marital status changed? Has your employment status changed? Have any kids left home in the past year? Do we have the correct phone and mailing address? Things like that. Then you're supposed to send it back by snail mail or scan it to them and send it to them as an attachment to an email. But the real purpose for that questionnaire is to find out if you're dead or alive. Because I found out if you don't turn that thing in within 2 months, they'll stop your direct deposit. So in my case, because I never got the latest one, so I couldn't fill it out and send it back, they thought I was dead. The problem is, and don't tell me Social Security and embassy people don't know this, the mail service, the snail mail service, in many parts of Latin America is absolute crap, especially if you live in a single family house in a neighborhood or out in the boonies. However, if you live in an apartment complex or a residential tower, or in a nice neighborhood in a big city, you'll almost always get your mail. That is, most of it anyway, though it can come weeks late. As you can imagine, that one critical piece of mail that comes every year, you better get it. Because if you don't get it and don't reply on time, they'll cut you off. And that's why, Johnny, it's a good idea, as I've heard you say in previous shows, to have your lawyer let you use his office as a mailing address, at least for the Social Security Administration and other important bits of mail. Though here they do have services like mailboxes, etc., some agencies and organizations won't ship mail or parcels to a P.O. box. So if you're living in Latin America and your mail sucks or is even a bit iffy, it's a good idea to make a deal with your lawyer to use his address for at least some stuff. Then he says, "As for me, Johnny, I learned my lesson and I'm in the process of working on that right now." However, there's good news and bad news. The good news is, after wasting a lot of time and effort, I've straightened it all out. They reissued my May deposit and everything's okay. And the bad news? Well, I'm not dead, so it's bad news for the government. They have to keep paying out. All right, then, Stu says, though I must say, for all the BS, I got a really cool business idea out of it. That's the way it goes. One thing leads to another. Signed, Stuart from Panama. All right, there you have it. Another situationally inspired business idea. Kind of spawned out of adversity. That's how a lot of these business ideas take root. And here's the thing. A lot of these business ideas, like Stu's, will only set you back a couple of grand. So if it doesn't work out, it's not the end of the world. Meanwhile, if you're looking to start any kind of business in the States, you've got permits, multiple inspections, strict bathroom access and parking ordinances, big time rents, heating, air conditioning bills. You've got strict labor laws to follow. You'll need a lawyer, accountant, multiple insurance policies. The fact is, I can't think of a single business, even a tiny business like a small food truck, even a hot dog stand, that won't set you back at least 25 grand to get started. But that's life up in the States. Speaking of red tape and permits and doing business or trying to do business in the States, listen to this. This comes from Phil in Virginia. He says, Johnny, I've been listening with great interest to those bits and pieces you've been dribbling out about solar power and how to set up your own system. I'm a do-it-yourself guy myself who actually, just about a year and a half ago, set up my own solar system in Virginia. I started with the idea about 3 years ago, but it took a year and a half to get it off the ground. It works great, and when all was said and done, it offsets my electric bill about $1,500 a year. Total initial cost for my system was around $17,000. Then I got a $4,900 tax solar credit / rebate. Total cost around $12,000. And my system, Johnny's a grid tie system. I don't have any battery storage, though after listening to what you have to say about solar power, I wish I did. But I have 36 Astro Energy 280-watt solar panels on the roof. So what I'm doing, Johnny, is using solar power during the day for my own house, when the sun's shining, of course. And with 36 solar panels, I've got a lot more than I need, so I sell the rest back to the grid. Now, Johnny, being a do-it-yourself sort of guy, I get asked this question all the time. What was the hardest part of putting that solar system together? People think it was putting up those panels. Man, that's a lot of roof time putting up 36 panels. Or they're thinking the charger and controller unit itself, all that wiring. Because I don't have one of those all-in-one units they have today. I bought mine a couple years ago now. Would it surprise you to know there was nothing difficult about the assembly at all? The most difficult and frustrating thing of all was getting the permits prior to installation. That took forever. And they come out to your house, do inspections before, during, and after, take pictures. And you know what? All the while, they were trying to coerce me into using a solar contractor that was registered with the state. It seems they don't like do-it-yourselfers. So the day the big semi-trailer arrived with four big pallets on it, I thought, man, we'll kick this thing out in no time. We'll get started on it this weekend. I'll invite my buddies over, pizza, beer, have a solar installation party. Well, guess what? Those four pallets sat in my garage for almost 5 months, waiting for the government to get off their asses, fill out the paperwork, do the inspections, issue the permits, getting the electric company on board to allow connection to the grid. That was a pain in the ass, too. Even so, I'd do it all again because I certainly learned a lot along the way. And when me and the wife finally move south of the border, we'll have a great handle on it. As a matter of fact, Johnny, I ordered my complete solar system from Wholesale Solar. There are a lot of excellent online solar outfits that'll put a complete package together for you and ship it to your door. Kind of like a massive IKEA project without any missing screws. If you got a problem, they're on call 24/7, so they're there to walk you through it and hold your hand if necessary. And for me, it wasn't necessary. Then, Phil says, but what I also learned along the way is you're absolutely right. When I move south of the border, I'll only need to buy half of the solar system I have up here in Virginia. And since now, at least, only two or three Latin countries let you tie to the grid and sell the power back to them like I do in Virginia, I won't really care about that because south of the border, I'll need less than half of the panels I'm using up here. With the money saved there, I'll be able to buy a nice big battery pack and go completely off the grid. Remember, my system here in Virginia cost me $16,000 before that government rebate. That doesn't include batteries. Oh, and Johnny, 3 years ago when I was thinking about this solar thing, my wife was not at all on board with it. She said, with all those stupid panels on the roof, it's going to look ugly from the street. When we're ready to sell, people won't want to buy it. Then I'd counter by saying, no, just the opposite. When they see the system is saving them $1,500 a year on their electric bill, they're going to say, yeah, I want to buy this house. Johnny, I was wrong. She was right. In the end, if you're house shopping, the lady gets final approval. In the end, solar is a selling point for guys, but for women, It has to look nice or it's no go. Bottom line, don't make your solar installation, bachelor pad, or dorm room ugly. Anyway, Johnny, there is a question wrapped into all this. When the wife and I finally get our plan B underway, and I'm ready to go solar south of the border, I'd like to order my solar system the same way, from a company up in the States or Canada like Wholesale Solar, and have them ship it down in one load. What do you think the shipping charges and import taxes would be on a system like you've been describing in the past few shows? 12 to 15 panels, batteries, controller, racking cable connectors complete. A system like that would fit on three standard pallets. Oh, and Johnny, being a do-it-yourselfer, what's the story on hardware stores? I hope they have franchises like Home Depot. For me, there's no better place to hang on a Saturday morning. Plus, as every do-it-yourselfer knows, no matter what project you're working on, big or small, you're always going to need something you haven't counted on. Nails, clips, fasteners, grommets. So what about it, John? Where's the nearest Home Depot? Signed, DIY Do-It-Yourself Phil. Nope, not D-U-I Phil, DIY Phil. But who knows, maybe both shoes fit. Well, Phil, first off, as far as having a complete solar kit shipped down from one of those online solar outfits, that's a very good idea. Plus, like you say, they're online 24/7 to take your calls, and it's toll-free. Now, to my way of thinking, if you're a do-it-yourselfer, that's probably the best way to go. And you know, even though there are lots and lots of solar companies and solar installers here in various cities in Latin America, from what I can see, they're all overpriced, and most of them aren't carrying the latest and greatest equipment either. Except when it comes to the panels. As mentioned in a previous show, there are huge solar projects going on in the tropics, so they're ordering the latest greatest panels in bulk. That's why you see them pop up all the time on buy and sell sites like OLX.com. In fact, just yesterday I was checking out solar stuff on OLX.com, and I found four different outfits that were selling 300 to 375 watt panels for $100 a piece. In the box, brand new. Man, that's like 30 to 35 cents a watt. That's cheaper than you can buy them up in the States. In fact, those are direct from China prices. Yep, that's right. Almost everything in the solar power business comes from China too. Oh, and just recently you've heard all the talk about Trump's tariffs on China, right? Well, you know, if you live in Latin America, that won't affect you a bit. Speaking of tariffs and taxes, Phil was wondering about that too. So what's the story? Most Latin American countries will not tax the solar panels themselves. The rest of the stuff, the lithium-ion batteries, charger, controller unit, etc., well, that varies depending on which Latin country you're shipping the stuff to. In some Latin countries, all solar stuff is exempt. In others, it's taxed anywhere from 10 to 20%. And the normal shipping charges, well, let's use that example of three pallets coming in from China or the U.S., whatever. You're looking at anywhere from $500 to $1,000. So, for example, you order a complete system from Wholesale Solar, just a name, I'm not endorsing them, though they're dependable. I've heard nothing bad about them. Let's say their system is $10,000. Add $800 for shipping. Why so much? Well, that stuff's heavy. If it's an all-in-one battery controller unit, it could weigh 400 or even 500 pounds. And each solar panel, 50 pounds, so 10 of those, there's another $500. So the pallets will come by boat and finally delivered by truck. Then let's say another 10% customs charge, that's another grand. In the end, we're talking $12,000 for a $10,000 purchase. Now you're set, you've got everything, all you need is a Swiss Army knife. Yeah, right. And there's a very good chance if you live near a medium or large-sized Latin city, you'll have more than a couple of gigantic hardware stores like Home Depot for the odds and ends. Which begs the question, why when you're assembling a thing, there's always a screw or a washer missing. Why don't they just add a couple extras? Damn. Enough said about that. All right, speaking of moving money and assets down to Latin America anonymously, or not so anonymously, depending on your case, one of the best, if not the best way, to transfer funds and capital fast and easy is Bitcoin or crypto. But, of course, if you've never dipped your toes into the crypto waters, you really don't know where to start, do you, and who to trust. Because even if you don't have any crypto and you're not into it at all, you've probably heard that once you send it to someone, you've got no recourse if you made a mistake or sent it to the wrong person. That's why you always have to know who you're dealing with, who's honorable and who isn't. A lot of skunks out there, and you know, they're not all in politics. Most, yes, but not all. So if you're up in the States, transferring some of your assets and wealth down to Latin America, your Plan B exit strategy site, you have to trust who you're sending it to, the receiver at the end of the line. Or you can do what seems to be more and more popular and secure these days, buy a hardware wallet like a Nano Ledger or Trezor, load it up with your cryptocurrency while up in the States, write down your 24 keywords and don't show them to anyone. Then you wipe, yes, wipe, the Trezor or Nano device, so it's got nothing in it, it's clean, it's empty. You fly down to your Latin Plan B destination of choice. When you get there, reload your 24 keywords and your crypto will instantly appear once again in your Trezor or Nano. It never was really gone, you know, it's always on the blockchain. But you know that, right? That way, when you're on your way out of the U.S., Houston, New York, or Miami, when you're stripped down, manhandled, is that still a word, manhandled? How could it be? It's patriarchal, sexist, with undertones of male violence. Strike that word. Now, where were we? Oh, yeah. When you're at the airport, being stripped down and person-handled, and suddenly you empty your pockets and your Trezor or Nano falls out on the floor, do you really want to hear the words coming from a spit-bubbling TSA agent? Hey, bub, just a minute. Is that a Trezor or a Nano device? Are you bringing Bitcoin across? Would you mind taking a seat in that hot, sweaty room over there? Well, then, since you wiped it, you could say in all honesty, it's a device that's completely empty. It's got no cryptocurrency at all on it. It's naked. Now, that's not to say I know anybody that's ever happened to, but it's a scenario that I think is going to start popping up. Anyway, the ownership of your crypto comes down to your 24 keywords, so you don't even have to bring a hardware wallet with you when you're traveling. As long as you've got those 24 keywords tucked away somewhere, when you get to your Latin country or Plan B destination, all you have to do is buy a Nano or a Ledger. You know, you can get them on Amazon. It'll come in a week. Load your 24 keywords in and voila, your cryptocurrency, Bitcoin, Litecoin, Ethereum, whatever, reappears in that brand new device. What could be simpler than that? Except, what happens when you're down in your Latin country and you want to convert that to funny money or buy things with it? Or perhaps you want to accumulate more crypto? Well, the good thing is, every Latin country has crypto contact groups and exchanges and meetup groups. All the countries have them. All the big cities have them. Now, a lot of gringos and expats and people working on their Plan B want to be completely anonymous or as much as they can. That means you really have to know and trust the people you're going to buy and sell from. Well, if you come down to my Expat Insider Seminar, you'll personally meet a group of extremely trusted and vetted crypto network guys. Mostly guys, very few women. Why? Because the Bitcoin and crypto universe started in the nerdosphere. Did I just invent a new word? Well, someone's got to do it. So what you had is tons of geeks and nerds jumping on board. So you can bet the first guys in, the now so-called crypto whales, were nasally voiced males with acne who were unattractive to women. Though, isn't it funny? The bigger your bank balance, or these days, crypto balance, the more attractive you are to women. That's why you'll hear in the upcoming email that it's oh so important you never tell anyone how much Bitcoin or cryptocurrency you have. Oh, and about the fact that 8 or 9 out of 10 crypto owners are male. I'm pissed. Where are those gender affirmative action warriors in the crypto space? Come on, you crypto justice warriors. Time to get out the picket signs and fire off a few thousand venomous anti-white male tweets. Time to rally the Bernie Sanders and occasional Cortex troops. Because there's real social and economic injustice here. Crypto justice warriors, time to man your weapons. Oh no, can't say that either, right? Gonna bite my lip here, give me a second. Ooh. Anyway, the email starts, Johnny. My soon-to-be ex-wife has hated Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies pretty much since I first learned about them. I stupidly talked and talked about it obsessively. After I bought some Bitcoin a while back when it was still around $800, she even went so far as to make a rule that I was not allowed to talk about it in front of her unless I spent some of it on her every time I brought it up. I tried my best to get her to understand it, but she didn't want any part of it. In fact, in 2017, I made some time to sit down with her and go through some quick YouTubes on how to set up and use a Coinbase account, but she never got off her phone, Twitter, and Facebook to pay attention. The truth is, Johnny, she is f***ing horrible with money. She got us $50,000 in credit card debt. And that's not even including her student loan, which, by the way, she's way behind on now and wants me to pay for in the divorce settlement. Oh, and recently at a court date, we had some time to talk. She said, Kyle, you're way too worried about that school loan stuff. When Bernie Sanders gets in there or whatever Democrat, they'll cancel the school loan thing. I said, if you're so sure, then take that condition out of the divorce settlement. But she didn't. Problem is, Johnny, if marrying the wrong woman isn't problem enough, she knows about all my Bitcoin and crypto stuff. Not that she'd ever be able to access any of it, but she can sure go to court and make a big case that I owe her a lot more because I'm hiding stuff and keeping it from her. In fact, her lawyer told me if I didn't pay up, he'd have my passport blocked until I did. Well, there goes that plan B. So just a little general advice if you're planning a divorce, like whoever plans that stuff, right? Load up your hard wallet Nano Ledger or Trezor with crypto. Never give anyone your 24 keys, and you'll never be at risk of the courts locking up your crypto assets. They can get everything else, but not your crypto. However, if you're in a good relationship and your wife wants to get into crypto, set her up with an online wallet like Coinbase. Because any wallet you set up on the net, like Coinbase, is traceable. That way, in the future, if there is a divorce and you choose to go the discovery route with your lawyers, only her crypto accounts, not yours, in your hard wallet, are traceable. Bottom line, if you're into crypto and you buy a hard wallet, it could be the best $100 you ever spent. Because I think very soon, and it's probably happened already, someone out there, maybe a group of lawyers with hacker skills, are setting up a crypto detective service. Man, won't that be popular with millennials going through a divorce? You know, the beauty of the blockchain is that for any particular coin, every single transaction made is on it. Remember, all the online exchanges like BitPay and Coinbase ask for proof of identity when you sign up. Just a heads up, Johnny, on how not to get burned. I'm speaking from very close to the flame myself. Signed, Kyle. P.S. Working on that plan B, Johnny. Can't come to your July seminar, but I'll be at the next one, provided my passport's not blocked. All right, Kyle, me, Johnny here. What more can I say? Oh, and speaking of plan Bs, don't forget, in a couple weeks now, my Expat Insider Seminar will get underway with a bang. It's an invitation to come down to Latin America for a week and drink from the fire hose. Just go to www.thenewexpat.com and click on Johnny's seminar link.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, you can schedule a one-on-one phone call with me. But first, download my free Plan B questionnaire at www.thenewexpat.com. Better yet, if you want to get your Plan B going from right up there in the States, just sign up for my 9-hour Expat Essentials course. Get the perfect Plan B blueprint by going to theexpatfiles.com/academy. Nos vemos!